What's up, my peeps? This is our podcast, Lessons from the Sun. I'm Nina Riccardi, and I'm the sun.
And I'm Tony Riccardi, his pops. We're here to share our personal conversations with you. We'll dive into lessons we learned within sports and our everyday life.
Or crack some jokes and have some fun. And you'll get to hear how much I bust my father's chops.
Hey, listen, we're close, but I'm still your father.
All right, pops, I get it. Now let's get into today's episode. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Sun. I'm Nina Riccardi.
And I'm Pops, and we have Coach Ferber back to join us in part two, continuing from the last episode, and we're psyched to have him on. Thank you again, Coach.
Okay. Thanks for having me back, guys.
All right, so.
Dive right into it, kid.
So what is your proudest moment while being coach?
While being coached?
While being a coach,
my proudest moment. Man, that's a really good, question. I'm going to have to say my proudest moment. Well, I think, you know, there's these two brothers. They're called the Palacios brothers. Okay. And they're both from Brooklyn. And over the years, I created a pretty special relationship with them. Went to the park quite a bit to hit and play defense and throw and hang out and do all that kind of stuff. And they recently got called up to the big leagues. Josh was up last year, and he then got traded to the Nationals. Now he's on the Nationals. Richie is with the Cleveland Guardians, and he got called up earlier this year. He's doing pretty well on the Guardians. But I think that was a really proud moment. I don't know if that's a really good question. You know, the proudest moment, because there's so many different ones, even the college commitments, when guys, are stressed out and they, you know, feel like they're not going to make it, and their family has so much pressure on them to go to a good school and all this other stuff. And, you know, they end up break down, crying, stressed out and all this other stuff. They feel like a failure if they don't get it. And then finally, when they get the scholarship offer, you know, there's been a lot of those moments for me, and each one of them has a special place in my heart, because, you know, it does. You see kids kind of go through it. Now, there are kids that it's super easy. It's like, oh, wow, the kid's a 6'4 righty throwing 90 in high school. He's good. But most kids are not like that.
Great. That's a great answer, Coach. And a great question by you. I mean, yeah. Coach, just so you know, I'm out playing basketball this morning. Nino's on his laptop on the way driving to hitting practice to go hit. And he comes up, all the questions that he asks are coming from him. He's not being fed anything.
No, so, I love that.
And you almost stumped Coach Ferber. That's impressive. Almost. He came through in the end. But that was a good one.
You got it. Yeah, I mean, you got to think. I mean, I've been coaching for 10 years, and there's so many moments where you feel proud. But they don't come from game wins, usually. They're not from winning games. Those weren't my proudest, because game's a game. But the personal accomplishment for the kids, those are special.
Yeah.
Well, he's got another one for you, which I find a rough one, so get ready.
Okay.
So what was one of the hardest moments or toughest on you while being a coach?
One of the toughest moments for me was coaching the first group of guys that I ever coached through their high school years, and getting them when they were in eighth grade. They got on the big field and staying with them for 4 years, the whole way through, you know, training off the field, on the field, coaching on the field, all that stuff, going through, you know, introducing them to every different college program, pro scouts, you know, and watch them go through that process of getting each individual one committed to a college program. And then just at the end saying goodbye, right? Like my time with you, it's not over for life, but my time with you coaching you, I'm no longer your coach, you know? And so now I have to hand you off to the next guy, right? And hopefully he treats you with the same amount of respect. And you go in there, and I've kept your imagination intact, your love of the game intact and whole, so that you're not jaded and you don't go into a situation thinking that coaches are unfair or they're there to just basically embarrass you or point out all your flaws and insecurities, right? That you love to practice and what you love to play. And now it's time for you to go spread your wings and do it. But when I was sitting around a table with all those guys and saying goodbye, that was probably the hardest for me.
Wow. Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah. It's deep. Well, also, you know, there's such a bond that's formed.
Yeah.
You get so close
and then you just gotta let go.
And imagine how coach is going to feel about Benny Blanco when he's got to go to college. Well, he's going to feel the same way, you know?
Yeah. Maybe even bigger.
Yeah. Probably more so.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way. I'm like, you get connected. It's hard to let go. It's not easy.
No.
So
that's all life is like the life is constantly like that. You like, you know, you find these people and you create these bonds and friendships with them. And then all of a sudden, like I have kids that I went to high school with, my group of guys in high school that you were like blood brothers. And like, you swore that, you know, you would never lose contact and you'd be friends forever. And when I look back at it now, I don't talk to hardly any of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I talk to one or two, but it's not the group that it was. And it would be nice if there was somebody out there that told you like, hey, this is going to be the last time that you're ever going to be with this group of guys. It would be nice if somebody alerted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We got a little choppy there, right?
Yeah, we're good. Good now.
Okay. So. No. I'm going.
Go ahead.
Unless you're asking a question or you're gonna say something.
Go ahead, Nino.
No, you go.
It's your show, brother. Go.
Okay, fine. So another, if you could be a head coach for any baseball team, any MLB team, what would it be and why?
Well, I gotta say the Yankees because I grew up watching them and I love the Yankees and my father loves the Yankees and my grandfather loves the Yankees, so that's an easy one for me. But
Just like the Yankees because all your family liked them?
Well, yeah. I mean, I grew up.
Yeah, well, that's like when you're saying that, like about the kids, I like baseball because my dad likes it, you know?
Yes. So I would say whenever you're shaping your whole life, the people around you have this big influence, like this big impact on what it is. Right. Whether you stay with that or you go, wait a second, I don't really enjoy that. I like soccer or I like tennis. You know, that happens too. But I became a diehard fan because the people around me, my older brother and everybody was showing me baseball cards, watch this game, taking me on the train to Yankee Stadium and watching and all that other stuff. You know, those things were fun. So I became a huge Yankee fan that way.
Got it. So you talked about a feel that a player has. Now, this is on the big field, you know, 13 and up. And I'm interpreting the feel thing as kind of like the ability to read the room. It's like to read the room and have a feel to interact with your peers and your coaches. Is that right? Is that the right read that I have on it?
Yeah, I would say feel is the best way to describe it is knowing like, being able to read the room, like you're saying, being able to get in where you fit in, right? And understanding when I should be talking and being a leader, and other times when I should be learning how to follow and take directions and take orders. And, you know, if you learn that one skill in life, I think our lives become exponentially easier. Mm-hmm. And I would actually argue that having feel might be the most important thing you could possibly have in life. I don't want to say more than education, but I will say that if two guys have the same level of education, or even one has a little less, and they both go into a job interview, and one of them has a lot of feel, and one of them has no feel, I believe that the guy with feel is going to get the job about 19 out of 20 times. Unless you're talking about a situation where a guy is sitting behind a computer writing computer codes and you don't need to deal with people.
Right.
Then the guy, you can be weird and you can be socially awkward if you're going to live by yourself in a little cubicle. There's nothing, and I'm not saying it's wrong with that, but I'm saying if you want to be part of a team sport and be able to interact with other kids your age, having feel is really, really important.
So, and I'm asking that question because my world is, and this is a selfish on my part, but my world is like 12 and under before you get to the big field. Yep. So what would you say is like the most important quality that you look for a player in that, like on the younger side? It doesn't have to be a skill. I mean, just a quality, sure. Whatever you think.
Well, I think with the young guys, like those guys, it's crazy because a lot of times I think with the young guys need a little more structure, right? Because they, if nobody teaches you how to warm up, then you kind of don't know how, right? So with the older guys, like as they start to have some discipline and they understand how to get their body ready to go compete and play, then you can kind of take your foot off the gas pedal as far as, you know, putting everybody in synchronized lines and stretching groups and doing jumping jacks. And now everybody's going to do these, you know, that stuff is needed when you're younger, because those kids, in order to learn, like, how do I get ready to compete? Because there might be a kid like Nino might like a series of stretches or a series of throwing progressions that make his arm feel good, that it does it for another kid. I have kids that are now grown men that are pitchers that are committed to big time schools that throw 90 miles an hour, that some of them, they're both starters. They're both really good. Some of them like throwing weighted balls. Some of them never will throw a weighted ball. I have some guys that do long toss and they back up to 300 feet and they just let it rip before the game. I have other guys that just throw a flat pen. They just try to get some feel of how the ball's coming out of their hand, how their changeup is working, just kind of get their release point working. They short distance, short box, little throws, and then come and walk it back in. So at the younger ages, you have to kind of see who is building their, who's able to like build their own routines. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the best way to answer the question. I would say that the kids that understand like how to build their own routines are going to be the ones ultimately that are successful and understand how to compete later on.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
The other thing with young guys that I've found is that it's some of them are do you have guys that are louder than other guys on the team?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And guys that are very quiet too. You're like very, very quiet. You have to pull it out of them.
Right. But I mean, some of the quiet guys are still really good players, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily look for a certain type of personality, mm-hmm. but I do look for a certain type of mindset, like some approach stuff. I don't ever allow a kid to throw a bat, but I'd rather take a kid that throws a bat after he strikes out and then a kid that could care less, because I can coach the kid to not do that anymore. And I can sit him on the bench or I can reprimand him or do something and say, I like your passion. And I like the fact that you don't like losing, but mm-hmm. you're not going to act like that and disrespect the game on the field. Right. The other guy that doesn't care about winning, probably not going to do much with him going forward.
Not much you can do. Right. Exactly. Yeah. You can channel the energy of the competitiveness. I understand what you're saying. All right, Nino, you're up, kid.
So if you could give any advice to a coach right now, what would it be?
Try not to overvalue knowledge and try and undervalue motivation. You know, you don't need what happens, I believe, with a lot of older guys, right, that are coaches, are as we go along in life, we learn all these different things about baseball and the game and everything like that. We might fall in love with it. And what happens is by the time we've cycled, we've gone all the way through it and the game like is this little funnel, right? And it keeps on getting harder and harder and harder, and players just keep on dropping off to the sides. Mm-hmm. Nothing you can do about it. Like, there's a speed that you have to play at. There has to be all these different things. You have to, the execution and the precision at which we have to execute gets so, it gets so hard. And so a lot of times, if you're a coach that maybe got to AAA, you gave your whole life away and you stayed in AAA for 5 years, but you never got your chance to go to the big leagues, you got released. Now you don't really have anything else to say about your life other than, I was a baseball player, right? Mm-hmm. So now you say, well, I guess since I don't have really much, many other skills, I'm just going to go back to coaching. I'm going to create an organization, or I'm going to just go to be a high school coach or a college coach or something like that, right? Because I still have experience in playing in the pro level. But a lot of times you'll see coaches that have been jaded, right? And they feel like, I gave my whole life to this game and it just chewed me up and spit me out. Now I'm sitting here on this field with a bunch of 14, 15 year olds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where I could have done house and been rich and famous, or whatever their thing was. But they when you put a guy like that in a situation with young kids, sometimes it's not the best mix, because they like to rely on the fact that, well, I was a pro, I was better than you, therefore you need to do what I say and how I say it, because you should automatically. They lose sight of the fact that that kid hasn't gone through your disappointment or whatever your picture, his perspective of how he looks at the game of baseball, he's still imagining that he's Mike Trout. And all it takes is one guy to take away, feel your imagination, tell it, you know, say, you ain't that good, you never will be, right? So you're trash or whatever, or embarrass you in front of everybody, in front of your teammates, try to point out all your, you know, it's like the guy Drake says, the rapper. They shout out all your failures and they whisper all your accomplishments, right? Shout out your failures and whisper your accomplishments. That's what a lot of coaches do.
Mm-hmm.
They, you see something doing something wrong. Hey, you know, this and that. But when I hit the double in the gap in a key point in the game, and then I come back in the dugout, I know a lot of coaches that'll just look the other way.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
To me,
I would just say, you know, investing back into the relationships. And also, you know, if I was going to really give one piece of advice, is think about the relationships with the players that I'm coaching as being more transformational than transactional. And I talk about that a lot, because there's really only two different modes of people, you know, and how do people do business? Is people that are very transactional, which is, I give you money for a service, right? That's a transaction, right? You give me $6, I give you a gallon of gasoline. Okay, cool. And then there's, you know, you pay me $500 and I coach your kid for a season. You give me $1,000, I give you uniforms. Okay, cool. You know, and these are transactions. But when you talk about transformational stuff, it has something that, now transformational relationships, they sometimes start out as transactional, right? They start out as an exchange of concerns, but then it grows into something that has way more to do than just transferring money for a service, right? What you got, Nino?
No, I was like, that's like with me and like the coach that's coaching me right now. It's like that. It used to be, but then it's not. It's like bigger and more, something better than just.
Yeah.
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 My parents will give you money. Can you coach me? You know?
Right. Yeah. That's how it starts. And then if both people on both ends are looking for something different, I'm looking for somebody that I can look up to, I can learn from, I can talk to things about, I can talk through things. I don't have to feel ashamed if I ask this person for help. Mm-hmm. Right. And the other guy, and the other person that maybe the teacher or the coach, the mentor, whatever it is saying, you know, yeah, it didn't go this way for me the way I wanted it to turn out in my career, but guess what? I really want to see you shine. Like, what makes me happiest is to see Nino smile and shine on a baseball field. If I can keep him smiling and shining on a baseball field, then I know that he's going to come back tomorrow and I'm going to have the ability to do something else and maybe get better a little bit. But if I just strip all that away and I don't keep him shining and smiling and feeling good, you know, at some point in time, when you get to a certain age, you might just say, you know what, this isn't for me. I got other things. I got better things.
Right.
So being trying to stay more transformational with my approach to relationships rather than being so transactional, where you pay me money, I coach your kid, and round and round we go. And I mean, you might make a little bit of impact on somebody, but I don't really see those type of relationships long lasting. I'll tell you something. I know if I'm coaching well, here's what I know, because everybody goes, well, how do you know if you're doing a good job as a coach, right? How do you know?
Yeah.
Wins and losses? Not really. Not at the amateur level, because I could take my team and play a bunch of subpar scrubs in competition all over, just go around and just look for weak teams or local teams and just go kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And my successful coach, if none of my guys made it to the next level, no. We just beat up on weaker competition. I didn't give them any college exposure. They went to high school. They played. They're cool. They were some good high school ball players, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I a good coach? Not really. I know I'm a good coach. I don't need the validation of winning a game or anything. I know I'm doing my job. If kids that I've coached, like 5 years later, right? I like to look in 5-year intervals. 5 years is big for me. If I don't think I'm going to know you in 5 years, chances are I'm not going to spend a lot of time hanging out with you. If I think that there's a chance that in 5 years, I may be still in contact with you, or there's something of value there that I'm just going to, I will invest my time into doing it and working with you or something like that. But the majority of people you meet on the street, or excuse me, I meet on the street, the majority of people, even the guys, teammates I played for, people at work, if I don't know you in 5 years, that going to affect my life? No. So I'm not going to be wasted. I'm not investing that kind of time. So with my players, in 5 years from the time they played for me, am I still getting phone calls from them? Are they still sending me funny videos, little memes, you know, things, you know, just on a random day, they're in college or they're wherever they are. Hey, Ferg, what's up? How you doing? Hope everything's well. How's the family? What, you know, or send me a little funny video says, hey, look at this. I thought it would make you laugh. Those are the things that matter to me, right? So I know if I'm getting those kind of messages from kids that played 5 years ago, I'm doing a good job as a coach. Once those messages dry up and kids, when kids that I coach say, when they're done playing for me, go, thank God, I never want to see that guy again.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm not. There are some coaches that think they're still doing a good job when they have players leave their team or leave their place, think, thank God, I never want to see that guy again. They still think like, yep, I'm doing a good job over here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the players are like, if I never see that guy again, it'll be too soon.
So what I'm, to summarize what I'm getting from that answer is, number one, coaches, look yourself in the mirror and make sure you're not a bitter coach, not bitter about the things that you might have or might have accomplished or might not have accomplished. This is a totally different spectrum. And two, invest in your players, invest emotionally in your players. And, you know, and that's the thing as a parent, I always look for, you know, is this coach invested in the success? Doesn't mean is, you know, Joey playing first base and batting the leadoff. It means, is he or she invested in getting my player better. And from a coaching perspective, it's just caring about people, right? You know, if there's a problem, take the kid aside, talk to him, give him a chance. And maybe you do something beyond baseball and help him become a better person. Even more importantly, right? You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's just, you know, a lot of parents, it's funny. Parents will research, like when their kid is going to college, they will take 20 hours to research every different college in the country. They will see, you know, what the degree is worth, what the value of it is, how much is the cost to go there, how big is the student body, you know, where is the school located, all this different stuff. Who's the coaching staff? How long have they been there? How many big leaguers have gone through the program? How many sectionals and how many regionals have they won? How many national championships? All this stuff, right? They'll review it. And then when it comes to getting a travel team, they'll just go, oh yeah, he's down the block. Okay, here you go. Here's my son.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Not at all. Does not make any sense. Just because it's local doesn't mean it's right.
No, I mean, you don't research the guy's name. Maybe he was a felon, a two-time felon. He just got out of prison. Really? Like there are no regulations on travel baseball coaches. Let's just put it out there like that. Yeah. Now, USA Baseball, they say that we're the governing body of baseball, but they're not. They're just one organization, and they do a pretty good job of doing background checks and stuff. I do work with USA Baseball, and they're a great company, but they don't do background checks on random people and random events. And at this current state right now, you could literally spend 25 years in prison for murder, right? Get out the next day, like draw up a cool little logo, right? And say, talk to an artist and say, hey man, I want you to print this on some uniforms.
Yep.
We're going to be called, the gangster, the shankers or something. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
Who knows? The shankers.
I haven't heard that word in a long time. I got shanked.
Yeah, but I got shanked.
Right? I haven't heard that in so long.
So what I'm saying is there's no background checks on any of these people, right? So if you're going to take the trouble of trusting your son, somebody to be around your son and teach him a game, and you're going to be there for a couple of years. Now, if you're just the type of parent that says, I'm just going to bounce from team to team to team to team to team, then go ahead. Mm-hmm. You don't need to research anything and just keep on doing that until you figure something out that everything is perfect the way you want it. You know, but good luck in trying to find something perfect, because I don't think that there is such a thing as a perfect baseball situation. I mean, let's just think about this for a second. What's a perfect baseball situation? Okay, so I'm batting third. I'm playing every inning of every game. I'm playing the exact position that I want to play all the time. I love all my teammates, every one of them. I don't have any problems with any of them. My coach, love him. I love my coach. I can talk to him. And do it. You know, that's perfect. But when does that ever happen? Nino, has that ever happened to you?
No.
No. That's right. So people are looking for
maybe this team now is like one, like probably the most perfect team I've been on so far.
Okay. And so when you say perfect, what does that mean?
Perfect is like the coach is amazing. The okay. teammates are nice and they're supportive and like
okay.
it's close.
Okay.
And it's like,
what else?
But are you always playing the position you want to? Are you always hitting in the spot that you want to?
No.
But no.
That's my point. The point is,
but I'm
being perfect is not the point of baseball. It's not meant to be perfect. It's mm-hmm. meant to challenge you and earn a spot so that you go, you know what? I'm going to out hit this guy, even though it's not where I want it to be right now for me. I'm going to come here, show up every day earlier than everybody else. I'm going to leave later than everybody else until I take that guy's spot.
Yeah.
So that's perfect. But a lot of people don't look at that as perfect. They look at that as, oh, wow, he's not walking into the team batting third, but I'm out of here.
Yeah. And you don't want that player as a coach, because you want someone that can handle adversity, that will communicate with you about what your goals are, and you can have a conversation with them about it, even no matter what age. I mean, if you're 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 year old, you can put into words what you want to accomplish in baseball. That's the beauty of baseball. It's an equalizer, right?
Right.
It allows adults and kids really to talk about the same thing, because it's really cool. Well, Coach, Nino finishes every podcast when he's interviewing a VIP like you this way. Okay. So, first of all, I want to thank you for your time, but Nino's got his money question coming up.
What is the first word when you think of yourself?
Playboy.
That's two words.
So for our 12 and under audience, break it down what that word epitomizes. Cause you say, I mean, I follow you. I watch you religiously. Explain how they can kind of translate that.
Well, it doesn't have so much to do with like women or anything like that. I think some of the things, like people think Playboy magazine or something. It's not like that. A Playboy to me is, we go back to having feel, and, mm-hmm. and it's a guy that can interact with pretty much anybody. Like a Playboy can do a lot of things. He doesn't do everything great, but he can do a lot of things well enough to be included in a certain thing. So he
jack of all trades.
He's a jack of all trades. If his friend needs, you know, if he's got a girlfriend and his friend doesn't, he'll help his friend get a girlfriend. He'll talk to a couple of girls, see what's on his, you know, he's a good wingman. He's also a playboy. Is I think a guy that can talk to a black kid from the projects, and then 5 minutes later talk to a white dude that's a CEO of, you know, a Fortune 500 company, and not feel out of place in either situation. You know, that's kind of what I feel like a playboy is. It's just a person that also playboys definitely care about how they present themselves, right? If you're a playboy, you're not gonna come to school with your hair all not combed, that don't brush your teeth, you know, because if one of your friends or somebody else is, you know, I talked about playboys a little more with the older guys because it does come into play in the high school years and stuff like that. But girls around, you want to put your best foot forward, and also just not for girls, but for yourself. I need my own individual life to be in order, and I need to look in the mirror and I need to like what I see. Right. And I think a playboy, right, when he looks in the mirror, I think that he thinks I'm perfect just the way I am right now. Right. I'm perfect the way I am now. That doesn't mean in a year from now, if I look in the mirror and I'm exactly the way I am today, I'm not perfect. That means I'm not progressing at all. But today, for right now, I'm happy with myself just the way I am. I feel comfortable in my own skin. And that's what it is.
Coach, what a great place to finish. The next time we talk, we're going to talk about Benny Blanco and how you're going to approach his life. But that's a teaser for the next time. I can't wait. We didn't have enough time to get to that, but start thinking about that one. I'm sure you have answers ready for us already. So,
well, I'm gonna probably be asking you those questions because you already got the boy. You got experience. You got Nino Brown over here. Tony Montana and Nino Brown from Miami.
they call him that all the time. He's like, "Who's Nino Brown?" It's awesome, Coach. Thank you so much. It's been an honor having you on.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for having you, boys. Take care. If you need anything, always reach out. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Later, guys.
Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for listening. Now, please do us a solid and hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast, follow our Insta, and if you don't mind, give us a 5-star review.
Hook up my homeboy and help us continue to grow, please. Peace out.